Right. Well, I'll probably start because I have an awful lot of slides as usual. Okay, so as you can guess by the T-shirt and the program and the first slide, I'll be talking about storm crawler. So I'll be talking about web crawling in general, about obviously storm crawler in particular an awful lot, but also giving a sort of introduction to storm. So who in the audience has never used Storm, doesn't know anything about it? Cool. Yeah, or just a bit. So, okay, so it means I can go a bit faster on the Storm slides. Brilliant. I'll also be talking a little bit about other tools and technologies like Elasticsearch and how we use it with Storm Crawler. So you're probably not sure you heard about me before, you know who I am. So I run Digital Pebble, a small consultancy in Bristol in the UK, like these two guys over there. I do basically anything to do with text, especially on the large scale. So it goes from natural language processing, machine learning, search, and in recent years, an awful lot of web crawling. I've been using and contributing to and I'm a committer on a number of open source projects, so obviously I'm the author of Storm Crawler, but I'm also a committer on Apache Nudge, which is quite relevant for this topic. Yeah, and various search and NLP related stuff. So as I said, yeah, I'm a committer on Nudge, and so I've been doing Digital Pebble for what, 8 years now. And during those 8 years, and I've been a committer on Nudge for probably 6 years, 7 years. So I've done an awful lot of work with various customers from small to quite big using Apache Nudge. So I know you quite well. I mean, I used to be the PMC chair and yeah, I've done an awful lot of work on Nudge. So I know its strength. I also know its weaknesses. And so over the years, you know, I've been thinking that maybe there was a way of doing things differently. Hopefully better, but at least differently. So this, what you can see here, is a graph of the network traffic on a crawl I run for one of my clients. And it's typical in the sense that, as you can see, so here as you know, Nudge is batch driven. It's based on, or it gave birth to Apache Hadoop. So everything is done by steps. So you have a first step where you select, which probably starts around here. So you select which URLs you want to fetch. That's called the generation step. Then you do the fetching, which you can see here. So a lot of network traffic, really good. We're getting stuff. And then a long queue, which means there's probably one server which is very slow, and it's slowing the whole thing. And then nothing happens as far as the network's concerned because we're busy parsing the content, updating the CrawlDB, and then doing another run of generation for the next iteration, and so on and so on. So in terms of reusing the resources, it's far from optimal because, you know, we're either using the bandwidth, but when we do, we're not using the CPU or the disk, and vice versa. So it sucks a little bit. Also, yes, you have those annoying long tails with the fetching. So there are ways of alleviating this. You can make smaller fetch segments with less URLs per domain. But the trouble is, if you do that, you have to do more generation and more updating. So a bit annoying. So writing a web crawler is a bit of a sport for developers. You go on Stack Overflow, you can say, oh, I wrote, or I'm writing web crawler, and there's hundreds of people doing this. So I'm sure some of you, well, I know for a fact that some of you have written their own crawlers over the years, and yeah, we all do that. So you ask, why another one? So I came up with a wish list for what I wanted my ideal crawler to be. So basically, scalable, distributed, just like Nudge, so we can handle big volume of data. Low latency, which Nudge is not great at because of its batch nature. So I wanted to be able to, have more control potentially on how and when a given URL is fetched, which is pretty important if you have, say, sessions or that, you know, for the the host you're hitting, they have a limited time to live, and you want to make sure that, you know, with a low latency, you will have more certainty that you will still be within that time to live. Yes, I wanted it to be efficient, or at least potentially more efficient than Nudge, but still polite, which is the number one requirement for any decent web crawler. I wanted it to be nice to use, nice to extend, versatile, so that you could use it not just for archiving, but for web scraping, for building search engines. And I needed it to be in Java, and that's just because that's the only programming language I know. So that's more my limitations more than anything else. And very importantly, I didn't want to reinvent a whole framework for doing the distribution and so on. So in the same way as Nudge is based on Hadoop and leverages Hadoop for all these things, I wanted to find something else for that. And at the time, so when I started thinking about all this, there was an emergence of stream processing frameworks. So the one I looked at was Storm. So at the time it was, I had the inkling that streaming was the way to go, and Storm at the time was in incubation. So nowadays there's there's a new framework for stream processing every month perhaps, and that's just at Apache. At the time there weren't so many, and I just had a look at Storm. I clicked the wrong button. Ta-da. Yeah, here we are. It does all the, it's obviously continuous processing of streams, and it does all the distribution for you, and the reliability and error handling and everything. The project was at the time when I started looking at it, and still is very dynamic with a healthy community. So it's currently two or three versions. So the stable version is 1.0.2, and for 2x there'll be a big change. There'll be moving to from Clojure to Java, which I think is not so much a reflection on Clojure itself as a language. It's more that Java has a wider user base, which is good news for me because that means I could potentially contribute to the project, whereas Clojure, forget about it. And what I liked with Storm was I found the main underlying concepts very elegant. Basically in Storm you have, as I said, continuous computations on streams of tuples. A tuple is a list of key values. So in our case, let's think, tuple could be something consisting of a string that would be the URL to fetch, and some object to represent metadata associated with that URL. Topology is a graph of spouts that emits the tuples and bolts that do operate on these tuples, and they are connected to each other by stream groupings. All right. From the, I'll go quickly on these because I gather you're familiar with all that, and you probably know more than I do about it. From an architectural point of view, it's a master-slave sort of architecture. So the master runs a daemon called Nimbus, which is what you submit your sort of topology definitions to, and Nimbus spreads it to worker nodes, which run something called a supervisor, and the supervisor does the handling of the worker tasks on these slave nodes. And they communicate through ZooKeeper. A good thing about it is that it's fail fast. So if your supervisor, one of your supervisors or Nimbus dies, then if you use the tool like Supervisor D or Daemon Tools or whatever, so if you run it under supervision, it will spring back to life and sort of refresh its state from ZooKeeper, which makes it quite robust and nice. Why is that key not working? So I mentioned the worker tasks. So these are on the worker nodes, obviously, and managed by the supervisor daemon. So these are the where the actual work is done. And yeah, so if you can think of a worker as a JVM and the executor, so we can see here, is like a thread in Java, and the tasks are the particular instances. And that's something I found quite difficult to get my head around at the beginning, was the differences between executors and tasks. It's basically you can have, well, you need to have less executors than tasks, and the number of tasks is set from when you start your topology. But you can size during the lifetime of your topology, you can resize the number of workers or the number of executors. But the tasks has to be fixed, and I gather this has to do with the stream grouping. Speaking of which, so that define the stream groupings define how the streams are connected to the bolts and how the tuples are partitioned among the tasks. There's a number of built-in stream groupings in Storm. You can also implement your own ones by extending or implementing that interface. So I won't go through them all, it's well documented. It's basic, but for the purpose of this talk, I just mentioned a few. So shuffle grouping is when you do a random distribution of the tuples across the tasks for the next following bolt. And the only thing you know is that this they will be evenly distributed. What else we need? Field grouping is when you hash based on the value of a particular field or fields. And finally, which is the one, local shuffle grouping, that just means that the Storm will select for the following, when sending a tuple to a bolt instance, it will select, if possible, one running in the same worker, which is, as we'll see, pretty important. So that's what it looks like in code. So you have typically build a Java class with a topology builder, and you define your topology in code. So here we have a spout that emits sentences, and we have two tasks for that, so two instances of two tasks for that spout, and then we have we define a bolt that will split the sentences, and here it's just to show that you can have a different number of executor. Well, threads, and different from the number of tasks, which means that, remember that the tasks have to be set from the start. Potentially, you can resize your while the topology is running, you can resize and scale up to say 8 threads, and using all the tasks, and that uses shuffle grouping because it doesn't really matter which instance of a splitter gets a given sentence. It makes no difference. Whereas for the following one, word count, obviously, if you have a particular one of these 12 instances counting a word, you want to make sure that a given word gets to the right instance of the bolt. What is it doing? Right. Oh, that's interesting. All my animations are broken. Never mind. We'll see later. Yeah, there are other ways of doing. Right. Lovely. Right. How do you run a topology? So we've just seen that class I built to define a topology. So you need to have a class like that. You need to build a new jar with your code and all the resources you need. Possibly a Maven pump file to define all the dependencies and everything. And then you build that Uber jar and you call Storm with the jar you just built and the name of the class which builds the topology. Now, if you want to have some custom configuration, you have to put that in home.storm. If you want to run it in local mode, then you have to code the fact that you will be running it locally in your code. And then, as I said, continuous computation, so it will just basically run until you kill it. We'll see later that there are other ways of building and running, not so much building, but running a topology. Right. Oh, gosh, it's gone completely wrong. Okay. Now, yeah, guaranteed message processing. I'll go very quickly on that. So you can, for the reliability, you can, so it's an ACFA mechanism. So your spout has two methods, ACK and FAIL, that for which you get the you get back the ID of a particular tuple after it's been fully processed, or if it failed. So it can fail explicitly in a bolt. Imagine you try catch an exception and you know there's something dodgy with a particular tuple, then you can fail it. It also fails with if you set a timeout for the whole process, and which by default is 30 seconds. So imagine you have a tuple stuck in the topology for some reason for 30 seconds, then it will be failed. How you handle the replay logic and what you do with it depends on your use case, depends on your data source. But at the spout level, you have that decision. You can decide to replay it once or more or whatever. More details on that link below. There's something not working up. Yes. So now I'll go through a few of the features of Storm, which I like. This is my all-time favorite, the metrics. So there's a wonderful framework for handling metrics in Storm, which I find is very elegant. So you define, you have multiple, well, you have an interface for iMetrics consumer with a couple of implementations by default. Well, out of the box, there's one, the logging metrics consumer will just dump a file in the logs with all the different metrics. So some of these metrics will be the system ones generated by Storm, by the platform itself. But you can also, of course, define your own metrics in your code and see them sort of propagated through that pluggable framework. It has obviously a UI. That's probably not the most. I know it is the 102, the most recent version. So that gives you an overview of your topology, of the various components in your topology, and it gives you an overview of who does what and what's taking more time, and it allows you very quickly to debug things and have a better idea of why things are particularly slow. Or not. It's a great tool. Obviously, you have logs. You have one log per worker and machine. You can change the log levels via the UI. It's a relatively new feature. That's fab. You just go there, enter the class name of the class for which you want to change the log level, and bang, you get that straight away. It's fab. You can also you can visualize the log files from the UI and do some regular expressions on them, I think. And then with the logs, as I mentioned earlier, you can have also the metrics files. There's a lot more Storm that I haven't mentioned, but yeah, if you go on the website, you'll find the documentation is really good. You can find all the details there. So now that I've covered Storm, let's have a closer look at Storm Crawler. So the best way to describe Storm Crawler in one sentence is to say that it's an SDK for building low latency distributed crawlers. Now, I think there's been a bit of a misunderstanding at times. Some people thought when I explained it was an SDK that you couldn't build a fully fledged crawler with it. Well, you can actually, it's pretty simple. But what I meant by that is it's not a monolithic piece of software like Nudge where, bang, this is what you get the whole thing. It's, again, what I had in mind was to do something very modular, very nice to use and lightweight. So it's been released, the first release was just over 2 years ago, but the work, I started the work on that a year earlier. Version 1.2, so again, if you look just at the version number, it's not necessarily, you could think, it's pretty young. No, there's been like 12 or 13 releases, and I think we are nearing 1,000 commits on the project, and there's been, I don't know, 13 or 14 different contributors on the project. And on average, there's a release every month or two, so it's pretty active. the license is the Apache license. And yeah, you build it with Maven, and all the artifacts are available from Maven Central. So yeah, the aim, as said, was to be as modular as possible. Just use what you need. So everything is handled as, you know, Maven dependencies. So these are the modules at the moment. So there's obviously the core module is the one. Yeah, you can't avoid if you want to use Stormcrawler. Everything else is optional. It depends on what you want to do. If you want to use Elasticsearch or Solr or Tika or whatever. And of course, if you have your own modules, your own plugins, there are some third-party ones on the web. And yeah, you can just, as long as you can handle them with Maven, then you can very easily use them with Stormcrawler. So we'll have a look at the various components in Stormcrawler now and how to use them to build a very simple crawl topology. So also we'll illustrate some of the main sort of challenges and problems that occur when you build a topology with Stormcrawler. So the very first thing, and it's also a reflection on how I started working on these things. So obviously it's a crawler, you need to fetch pages, so you need a bolt that does the fetching. So the input would typically be a string for the URL and some object to represent metadata with the URL. The output would be same thing with a bit more stuff in the metadata with additional things we would have obtained from the fetching step, and then the byte content. So that's the ins and outs, so to speak. So let's imagine that we have some magical spout that generates URLs and metadata, and we'll just ignore. Let's take that as given for now. We get URLs to fetch. So in the code, you'd have something like that. So you define, as we've seen earlier, a fetchable here with three instances. And yeah, shuffle grouping from the spout. So the first, and it's something that's been mentioned in the previous talks as well today in this room. So as I said, number one requirement, politeness. So needless to say that the fetchables will have to respect the robots.txt directives. And those robots files, they tell us basically two things. Am I allowed to fetch this particular URL or not? And when I send requests to your server, how frequently can I send requests without irritating you? So obviously, the robots.txt files or contents are cached because you don't want to get them every time you want a URL from a given server. We take the fetch interval from robots.txt if there isn't one, and it's often the case, then we have a configuration thing to define one by default. Have we sorted the politeness? No, because otherwise we'd be asking the question, so how do I display this thing? Nah, it's not that. Try that. No. Whoa. Because the spouts, we do the shuffle grouping from the spout. So it could be that the spout is sending three URLs from the same domain pretty much at the same time to the fetcher bolt, and then you have those three instances will all get one URL from the same domain each. Forget about politeness. You've just ruined it by doing this. So we need something else. And that's why we use the something called the URL partitioner bolt, which is put usually just in front of the fetcher bolt, and that just generates an extra field in the tuple key. And then, so when we do the grouping, this time we use the fields grouping, and we say, hey, take the stuff from the partitioner, and not straight from the spout anymore, but use the field key to determine which instance of the bolt you should send a particular tuple to. So then that's fine. Yeah, we know that all the URLs for a given host, domain, or IP that's configurable will go to a particular instance of the fetcher. So then we can enforce the politeness. There's two flavors of the fetcher bolts. There's one called the simple fetcher bolt, where the fetch is done within the execute method. So the execute method is what bolts do. So the fetching is done there, and it just blocks if not enough time has been spent since the previous call to the same server or host or domain. And so all the incoming tuples are stored in the queues used by Storm to store your tuples in front of a bolt. So it just relies on the Storm data structures to queue things. Then there's the fetcher bolt, and this one, if you're familiar with Nudge, the concepts are taken pretty much straight from Nudge. So this time we put all the incoming tuples into internal queues, so within a fetcher bolt instance. And then we have a number of threads, internal threads, to this bolt instance, and they just pull the URLs from the queue. So if the next URL for a queue is not allowed because not enough time has been elapsed since the previous call, then the fetcher thread, will just move on to the next queue and so on. And also, you can allocate more than one thread per queue, so you can do multi-threading on a given host or domain. So whether you use one or the other is partly a matter of personal preference. Although if you want to crawl your own website and you want to do it fast and you're okay using 10 threads in parallel for the same website, then the fetcher bolt would be a better fit. There is, however, consideration with the simple fetcher bolt is that imagine you have a sequence of URLs from domain A, domain A, domain B, domain B, because it just blocks until the next URL is allowed. It means it will be blocking after the second A instead of going straight to B. So the performance would probably definitely be better with the fetcher bolt. But some people prefer the simple one because it's conceptually easier to understand. The code is simpler. Right. It's weird. It's not in sync. That's weird. Sorry, I'm having some difficulties with my slides. Right, here we are. So we fetched a web page successfully. Next step is to extract the text and metadata. For instance, for indexing, so if you understand the stuff to, say, Elasticsearch, well, typically you'd index text and any of the metadata you would want to. So the parsing doesn't do just that. It has... there's like an endpoint called parse filters. And a parse filter just has to extend an abstract class and do all of its work within the filter method, which is here. And there's quite a large number of parse filters available out of the box with Storm Crawler. The main one is the XPath parse filter, which, as you've guessed, allows you to define XPath expressions and extract stuff from the DOM structure of a document and store that in the metadata. So sort of stuff that people use for scraping content of web pages, or canonical meta tags or whatever you want, or titles. So these parse filters are configured with via JSON file, so there's no fancy plugin, framework, whatever. No, it's just you have a JSON file in the resources of the jar that you build, and then Storm Crawler will just read it and load the instances of these filters in the order in which they are defined. So here we're defining an instance of an XPath filter. We extract the value of the canonical tag and store that. So that will then be stored in the metadata as a key value with canonical as a key. Same, you can extract descriptions, title, keywords, whatever. So that's commonly used for all sorts of things. getting really annoying. So we are beginning here to have all the basic building blocks for a very simple crawler. So in code, our topology would look like something like that. So we have our partitioner, fetch, bolt, the parser, and the indexer. So the indexer could be, we'll see later with Elasticsearch and everything, but it's just do something with that content you just fetched. One thing to notice here is that here we're using a local or shuffle grouping. Why? Because that's after we've done the fetching, so we have all that byte array containing all the binary content. That's pretty heavy. We don't want to move that across the cluster. We want it, if there's an instance of a parser or an indexer, which is in the same worker task, basically JVM, then we'll use that. It's a way of optimizing things a little bit. It's working now. I don't understand this thing. Another way of looking at this basic topology is some spout. So again, could be anything. So it could be something pulling URLs from a distributed queue like RabbitMQ, or it could be AWS SQS. And again, the indexer could be any form of storage, but often things like Solr or Elasticsearch. All the components in gray are the ones coming from the core module. And again, that's, if you want to use Stormcrawler, you have to have at least the core elements. Now, that works well with simple non-recursive crawls where we don't care about discovering new links or when all the URLs are known in advance and just stuff we want to fetch and so on. So, great. What about recursive crawls then? How do we schedule revisiting URLs after we've already done them? So that's an illustration of what happens during a recursive crawl. So it's the URL frontier. So you can see here, with the various iterations and the step from the seeds, is you discover more things. Some, not all URLs are interesting. For instance, CSS files. Do you want to index CSS files in Elasticsearch if you want to build a text search engine? Probably not. Do you want, to do MP3 files, videos, whatever. So you can have ways of controlling the expansion of your crawl. Another thing to notice from this illustration is that there are multiple ways, paths, in which a given URL can be discovered, which means that potentially you have to take care of sort of deduplicating the information about URLs. If you had only distributed queues and you added, every time you discover a new URL, you added it back to the queue, you'll have the same URL multiple times. That wouldn't work. So first, the outlinks. So that's done, they're discovered by the parser bolts. And in the same way as we had parse filters to have plugins to operate on the content, we have URL filters to normalize all blacklist URLs. A URL filter has to implement a given interface, which is pretty straightforward. Same story, you configure it with a JSON file, which I'm not going to show because it's trivial. There's quite a few filters that you can use out of the box with Stormcrawler. Quite a few that are not at all in Nudge. Like we have one which looks for whether we have in the cache the robots directive for a given host. And then when discovering the outlinks, it will discard the ones that we know. If we know that we'll get, robots will prevent us from posting them, we don't add them at all in the first place. And that's, for instance, something which is not in Nudge. There's the typical host filter. So that's how you control your crawl and say, and you say, hey, I want to stay within the same domain or within the same host name. You do that through the URL filter. And so on. And depth, obviously, if you want a limited, you don't want to crawl forever, you can say, hey, I want a depth of, say, 6 from the seed, and that's how you do it through this mechanism. So now it's a slightly different picture from the one we saw previously. Previously, we were relying just on the default stream, which is here in black. Now, and that's something I like with Storm as well, is you can have, you don't have to have one stream, you can have multiple streams and you give them different names. So in our case, we use a particular type of stream called status, and that's used by the fetcher, parser, and indexer whenever these components want to tell us something about a URL. So the fetcher, imagine it bumps into a redirection. So potentially that redirection is something that is potentially unknown and we want to fetch it. So it will send a tuple on the status stream saying, hey, I found this. Obviously, same for the parser with all the outlinks. And finally, the indexer, when it has finished processing the entire topology for a given page, would say, hey, I'm done with that URL. I've processed it. It's been successful. So now we have a new type of component on this picture, which is the status of data. And that component will be in charge of updating an external database. So, well, in database in a very broad sense, some external, say, storage or repository for the URL information. And that will be external to Stormcrawler. That's really annoying. Right. So the status stream. So you would define it as such in the code. So again, you plug the output of the fetcher, parser, and index bolts to that status of data. But this time we define constant, like the status stream name. We say, hey, don't use the default stream. That's for the content of the main document. This is a different type of stream. This is a status stream. So when you want to implement a status of data bolt, so you can extend an abstract class which does all the querulous things for you. First, it allows you to determine via configuration which metadata you want to persist to the storage, because not everything is valuable, and you might want to, if you inject seeds with a given metadata that you want to track for some particular reason, you would also specify, hey, I want that back into my my storage. It handles the scheduling as well, so all these things, the scheduling is completely pluggable. There's a default logic, well, default implementation, which allows you to configure, say, when you will refetch things based on their status. So, for instance, if a URL is generates some error with a parsing or thing, you don't want to fetch too often, or if something is discovered, you probably want to fetch it straight away. So that's how you can define your scheduling. So when you write an extension of status of data bolt, you have to focus mainly on one method, which is the store method. And the status values look like this. So we have discovered, doesn't mean it's new, it means it's potentially new. It could also be something you already know and already fetched and possibly got a fetch error, which could be a temporary thing, or it could be a redirection, and so on. So then, which backend to use for that external storage? Well, that depends on what you want to do with your crawl. If you don't want to follow outlinks and you want to, you have like a set list of URLs you want to fetch, you can just use like distributed queues. If you do recursive crawls and you can get potentially new outlinks and duplicates in the past, for you can have potentially multiple times the same URL discovered three different ways, then you will want something different, probably a key value store or a search system like Elasticsearch or Solr. Also, do you want to refetch the URLs at all? And if so, when? So that really depends on your scenario and also the rest of your architecture. So usually, people don't very often do crawl just for the sake of crawling. They do it in a wider context with a different environment and possibly another part of the process doing some analysis or whatnot. So there'll be a set of tools often that will already be sort of predetermined and used, but Stormcrawler itself is pretty agnostic. You can just write new new resources to use whichever database or flavor of storage you want to use. But yeah, some crowd doesn't force you into using a particular tool. So again, another, when I had StormCrow in mind, I am probably scarred by my years of using Nudge. I really wanted to make things as easy as possible for people to crawl with StormCrawler. So the first thing I did was to add a class called a configurable topology. So if you think back about the slide where I was showing how to, you know, the steps to run the topology on Storm, so you have your class, your resources, you build everything. Configurable topology was aimed at doing things a little bit better. So you can, you know, if you want to run this in local, for instance, you don't have to hard code that in your Java class. You just specify a parameter on the command line for doing so. Again, your configuration, it doesn't have to be in the home.storm directory. It could be just a file in any arbitrary location, and you'll just specify where that file is. It looks funny again. Yeah, so that's typically how you use the configurable topology. I think what I was trying to mimic was probably the way jobs are defined with MapReduce. We have that run string args sort of method, and everything else is just standard. So you still define your topology in the usual way, but all the stuff about running it in local or with the time to live or specifying the files is handled by that abstract class. That's the thing I'm the most pleased with in the last year or so with StormCrawler is archetypes. So imagine we have that working topology class. We've defined our topology and so on, and it's working and it's great. You still have to write a POM file for the dependencies, your resources to define your URL filters and path filters, some configuration file for the config we just mentioned, and so on. So instead, you can just use the archetype, which is with the Maven commands, and that will generate a set of files to get you started, and you can just modify the bits you need and take that as a starting point. So the files you're getting look something like this. You'll get a default crawl topology in Java, which you then add the bits you need. A reasonably good set of filters, normalizers, and so on. A configuration file, the POM, a nice README to get you started, and also a Flux file. So Flux is, it's a bit cheeky here. That's part of Storm itself, not StormCrawler. Flux is a relatively recent addition to Storm, and it's basically instead of defining your topology and everything through a Java class, you can do it with a YAML file, and then you just call instead of calling the name of the class for your topology, you just call the Flux class, and then you can do the same thing as we do with a configurable topology. So there is some sort of overlap. You can tell it to run locally, not on the cluster, and you can specify a file containing the topology definition and the config for it. So that works fine. That's brilliant. It's a nice, concise way of doing things. And when you do the when you get all the files with the archetypes, it will come with a Flux file to get you started. However, what I found is that when you have a quite complex build which requires a lot of objects and so on, it's often just easier to use the configurable topology. So as I said earlier, there's again wanting to make things modular, and so that people didn't have to download like an enormous amount of code and many dependencies and everything. It's all very modular. So there's a lot of things in core I haven't mentioned. So there's a bespoke build to process sitemaps, one to process feeds, and many more. Then there is, in the external repository, we have resources for various open source projects, Tika, So that's for Apache Tika, is for parsing various file formats and extract text and metadata from various proprietary formats. There's a very simple module to do SQL, so to store your, what is the equivalent of the CrawlDB nudge, so your status information of your URLs into SQL, because not all crawls have to be massive. You know, I did a survey a few years ago of nudge users, and it was really interesting. Just a few did very large, properly, you know, big scale, and a huge majority did tiny crawls that could run on a laptop. And again, you want to accommodate the needs of people who do small things. And often people are familiar with it, with SQL. It's very common. So yeah, this module allows you to leverage that. There's a blog entry with a tutorial on how to use that module. And yeah, and then Solr and Elasticsearch, where we use them to store the status information of the URLs as an index, and also the metrics, and also obviously to index the actual documents. So now I'll just zoom a little bit on the Elasticsearch module, probably because it's the one which is probably the most popular one to use with some crawler. It's currently based on the version 2.4.1, and yes, before you ask, work has started on on version 5. And as I said, I have to speed up, sorry. So it gives us ways of storing all the our data space of URLs and everything in an index. So we have a number of spouts that will query this index and just, it's basically get me all the URLs that are due for fetching now, group them by domain host or IP, and send that down the topology for fetching. Obviously, an indexing bolt for indexing documents, and also the metrics mechanism I described earlier. So we have a way of sending the metrics to a specific index for that, and it's a great way of monitoring the crawl. And you can then use Kibana to monitor your crawl in real time. So that's what, you know, like a basic dashboard would look like. So that's a little crawl I did a few days ago just for playing, just as a way of illustrating. And the only interesting thing here is that see the number of threads and pages, and now cast your mind back to my nudge graph with the long tails and, you know, spikes and then nothing, spike nothing. Here, it's, you know, it's probably not perfect at times, and there's probably explanation as to why it's not that solid. But it's pretty solid. It means it's achieving its goals of always be fetching, parsing, updating everything at the same time. Yeah, you can also use Kibana to display the to have like an instant view of your status index, so you can see the number of URLs fetched, discovered, and also your top host name. So, for instance, you do a crawl, you see that a given host name has, you know, taken over the whole thing. 1 minute, okay, thanks. Right, very quickly, a few use cases. Bloody annoying. Right, so yeah, one of the very first users, Weborama, company based in Paris, and their case was very, very simple. So it was just click streams. So URLs coming as streams, a very natural fit for Stormcrawler. So they just had a supermassive RabbitMQ in front of the topology. So very straightforward, but that really did the job for them. Stolen Camera Finder, based in Bristol, they use Elasticsearch to do very cool stuff with EXIF metadata from images. And yeah, I could, if you're interested, find me later and I'll tell you about this because it's really cool. And they did some interesting customizations of the dashboard with Kibana. And finally, not this one. Yeah, and also Common Crawl. So the new scroll, Sebastian mentioned it earlier, the new scroll runs with Stormcrawler. Again, find me if you want to know more about this. What next? Work on Elasticsearch, language ID module, which is already committed. And Selenium-based protocol implementation to deal with those pesky Ajax websites. There will be probably a one-day workshop in Berlin in January. If you follow the Twitter account for the project, I will update and tell you when it's on. Hopefully it will happen. References, the slides will be online. References, and I'm late, and I just have time to thank you very much for listening to my talk.